I grew up with robbers, bank robbers, armored car robbers, killers, takers. I grew up with those type of guys.
Welcome to a podcast about nothing with V
and AD.
We have a celebrity here today. We're still working on our
sound effects. Boy, still broke.
Oh, man. Welcome, Mr. Lorenzo, a.k.a. Renzo, b.k.a. Unk. How are you?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
We are doing great.
I'm amazing.
How was
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Same to you. Happy New Year's.
How was your holiday?
It was fine. As long as it was with family, I was cool.
I know that's right. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Grew up in Washington, D.C., Washingtonia. Grew up in the Northwest area. Attended Catholic school for like 2 years. Went to Holy Redeemer. Then I ended up going to Shaw Junior High. Graduated from Shaw. Graduated from Shaw. Ended up going to McKinley Tech, then got injured at the age of 15, which is the reason why I'm a paraplegic. After that, I couldn't go back to McKinley Tech because it wasn't accessible. So I ended up going to Dunbar, where I graduated from Dunbar High School in 93. Yeah, 93.
Damn. And,
say it again. I'm sorry.
I said, damn, 93.
Yeah, graduated in 93. That was something my mother wanted me to do, at least graduate from high school.
Amen.
Took a few, had a job, and then I ended up enrolling myself in UDC for a few years. But in a nutshell, that's basically like the beginning of, you know, the early, the teenager years from, you know, where I grew up and how I grew up. So, you know, if it's anything you want to elaborate on that upbringing around that era, we can discuss that.
Yeah. So in D.C., growing up in the late 80s, tell us about that. You said Northwest, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And McKinley Tech is in Northeast. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you basically, you had to be bused from from where you live to McKinley Tech. And you said,
yeah, I got a ride.
Oh, you got a ride.
Yeah, I got a ride to school.
I know that's right. You got a ride to school. What was it like growing up in D.C. during that time? Because we know D.C. now is a very different D.C.
Most definitely.
Exactly.
So explain to us.
Around that era, that was the crack pandemic era where, you know, it was a lot of drugs and gangsters right outside your doorsteps and just a lot of negative things going on that you was faced with every day. So you either going to adapt or be swallowed by the rules. I mean, by the wolves, I'm sorry. By the wolves, or just to keep up with what's going on, you had to give off, you know, I can deal with this or a tough persona or just, you know, your friends, just to hang with your friends, you can't be soft, but then they don't want you around them. So it was kind of rough growing up, just that whole era, but I kind of fit in. I was, like they say, with the shits and, you know, those type of things. So I grew up kind of too fast, I say. Mm-hmm. I grew up kind of fast.
And you said at the age of 15 is when you became paralyzed.
Injured. Yep.
And
yep.
How did that affect? I know you say you had to switch schools. Mm-hmm. But how did that affect you moving forward?
I think what it was mentally, what really helped me, to be honest with you, was family support and friend support, because they still embraced me as if I was still walking. Mm-hmm. So they didn't turn it back on me. And I think for any individual that's facing a disability, you really have to support their injury. You really have to get behind them, make them feel accepted, make them feel like, you know, it's just a hiccup. we're going to deal with this together. We're going to go through life together. I'm there. If it's something that, you know, you may need help. And that's what kind of helped me get through it. And then, thank you. And then when I went to Catholic school, I had a relationship with a preacher. So he spent a lot of time just, you know, just letting me know that your life is still valuable regardless of your situation, because it could have been worse. And I think once they instilled that in my head that I could be dead and I'm still alive, I think it was kind of easy to get over. You just had to go through life and trials and tribulations. Challenging.
Yeah.
Dang. That puts a different perspective on it.
Yeah. It's the support. Like, that's the big key to any person that's going through any illness, any disability. Like, this is, it's the support, that family love, that friend don't turn your back. Like, my friends never turned their back on me. They still accepted me, you know, came to see me, spent time at the hospital. And that kind of helped me. And then what really did is when I realized the women were still loving, you know, liking me and still interested, it was easy to get over.
That was,
It was easy to get over it because you were still getting love. Because it was like around that era, you didn't really see too many guys in the chair.
Yeah.
Like it was, around that time, you were just hearing about one or two or three, you know, no more than five. I didn't even know no more than four or five guys that I know that was in the chair around that era. So you was kind of like new, but people was like, let's accept him because we know who he is.
Yeah.
So it was easy to embrace. It was easy to embrace my injury due to that.
Yeah. I think like AD just said, you're very charismatic. So your personality, you know, shined through, you know, all of that. So it was, you know, Renzo, and then, oh, that's right. He's in a wheelchair, but it was like,
it
didn't come first, you know,
right. Your
personality shined through that. Yeah, definitely.
But here's the thing about that though. All right. You in an urban community, right?
Mm-hmm.
You in an urban community, and what goes on is getting money, looking good, rough and tough persona. So now I had to figure out how to continue being that person that I was before in the chair. So now it pushed me. It challenged me. It made me feel like that I got to prove a point. So I had to prove that I still can get money. I had to prove that I still can look nice. I had to still prove that I'm still the same person you can't play with. You know what I'm saying? So it kept me involved just because I think if my mother would have moved me out of that environment,
it
would have changed my outlook on how I would have became. Because if I stayed in that environment, those are things I still have to obtain. So the quickest way to get money was drugs. I had to keep the persona. I'm still the same guy. So my friends and, hey, here go a gun if you need it. What else? And just stayed doing what I was doing before I got injured.
Yeah.
So once they showed me that you still can, you know, do this and do that and get money, it was kind of, the transition was kind of being easy to be accepted. As long as I just obtained those, you know, those things.
That's how I know your mind is sharp, because most people wouldn't even process it like that. Like, I have to stay the same instead of, like, changing or adjusting to everything that comes around it. So that's
But it pushed me to be a go-getter. And that's the blessing part of it, because I looked at it as I got to get money on my own. Ain't no one going to hand me no money or nothing now that I'm in this situation, because I grew up with robbers, bank robbers, armored car robbers, killers, takers. I grew up with those type of guys. But then I had to realize that they're not going to give you no money, so you have to come out here and get your own money. So that's what I did. I pushed myself. Like, if I'm going to be selling drugs in this chair, shit, I'm going to be trying to sell as much as I can and get up off the block. So in the beginning, there was a whole lot of back and forth, getting locked up here and there throughout the years. But I told myself, listen, you got to be a smarter hustler. Like, I didn't hustle to get caught or commit a crime to get caught. I committed crime to get away and hustle to get away. So I knew what I had to do. I noticed my friends always was on there making money and then spending to get clothes. I was like, shit, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get it, keep flipping it, and then I'm going to try to serve my friends. They can buy it for me, and I ain't even got to be on the block as much.
You so already had that entrepreneurial mindset.
Say it again.
You already had that entrepreneurial mindset.
Entrepreneurship, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's where it started from. To be honest with you, that's where they started from the environment, how to get out and get your own money.
So do you think, you know, you're out there, you're hustling, selling drugs, the people you're hanging around with, do you think that prepared you for the next chapter, starting your own business? Do you think it helped? Because like you said, you got the money, and instead of going out there buying clothes, you flipped it and basically started your own operation. Yeah. Do you think that that helped you in going out there later, and going legit?
Later down the line, it did. You got to look at it. You got to learn how to simulate and adapt to the era of what's going on. And I think for me, I adapted to the eras of the 90s, 2000, 2010. So 2000 was on the block, stocking your money. 2010 was more of being the man who had, being the guy who had it. Mm-hmm. So you could supply people that's on the block. 2010 to 2000, let me see, 2010 to almost 2020, if you notice, entrepreneurship changed. I mean, the whole era changed where it was about entrepreneurship.
Yep.
So now if you are a go-getter, you have to figure out what is the need. What is needed? Mm. You know what I'm saying? So now you start your business based off a need. Like what I did was, you know, I stopped hustling because I had my son, right? No, then again, I ain't gonna say that. I'm gonna say around 2016, enough was enough. Where I was like, you know something, I'm not gonna keep getting these breaks, not getting caught. And there was a whole lot of stuff going on in the drug game where you was taking too many penitentiary risks. And then you had people who envy and was jealous of you because you was getting money. So now the younger guys that was under me, it wasn't no more as a principal. It was more of a, we can rob, we can take and all that. Mm. So I went through little situations where I took L's, and then I started to see that it's not the same as my era where it was unity, but it was more of a selfish of, I take that nigga money or whatever the case may be. Yeah. So when I started to see the change in the people that I was around, and then I knew a lot of my team of people that was close to me started doing other things, I had to make a decision. Either you're going to stay in this game and deal with the wolves, or you're going to go in and just take what money you have and start your business and get out the lane where you can say you won, as in still being alive, even though you may not be rich. But you're still alive. You're not in jail. You might have a little couple of dollars saved up. Mm-hmm. So that's the decision I chose, because now my son is started becoming a teenager. Mm-hmm. So he started to see from daddy carrying a gun or having a gun in the house or having wads of money. So now he started to comprehend and understand that. Yeah, I know what he's doing. He's doing wrong. Because one time it was discussed with his mom that she told me that he seen a gun in my drawer. And back then, when I was still in the streets, as he was getting older, you know, I kept a gun. And when she started to say, like, you got to be careful how you moving, because now your son is starting to see this stuff. Yeah. So I just told myself, you know, enough is enough. And I said, you know, Sam, I'm going to go ahead and take what money I got. I'm going to go ahead and sign up with Project Empowerment, get my thoughts together. And I started Project Pyman. They gave me a little job. And then Charles Jones, which is the director of Project Empowerment, came to me and said, we have a new entrepreneurship program that we're about to start called Expire in 2016. And he said, I want you to be in it. Because I used to come to him with all types of, like, programs I want to do, because it was hard for me to get jobs. That was another thing I didn't discuss. It was hard for me to get jobs, and I don't know if it was because of my background or because of my disability. So that's another reason why I didn't apply for a lot of jobs, because I always kept getting turned around at the interviews. Mm. And I'm like, I'm qualified for this position. Ain't nothing but an admin or a secretary position. Like, why they not picking me? So I got tired of being turned around, and I was like, you know something? I'm going to go ahead and try to start my own business. And at that time, we had the issues with Metro Access. It was this was around the time when Uber just came out. Mm-hmm. Metro Access was having problems with people transporting people with disabilities. So I'm like, you know something? I'm gonna go ahead and start my own transportation company because shit, I'm a perfect guy to talk about what's needed because I'm going through this situation.
Genius.
So that's perfect. When I got in the Aspire program, I looked at it as this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna start a transportation company. And that's where it started from.
What made you look up the program? Because I'm pretty sure there's so many people that's in your position, you know, in and out of jail, maybe have a disability, maybe not have a disability, can't find work. It's like, where did you start?
You can finish, so I don't want to cut you off.
People around you telling you, hey, there's this, or did you go out there looking for it?
Mm-mm. When I was working at Project Empowerment, Aspire came through DOES. Before the program Aspire hit, I already knew that it was coming about because I was working at Project Empowerment. Mm-hmm. Charles Jones was part of the people that was in the beginning of starting the Aspire program. So it was a few other entities within, like the mayor's office, mm-hmm. Project Empowerment, DOES. Like, so he told me, listen, there's something coming down the pipeline for entrepreneurs that we about to start, and I want you to be in it. And it was more for people in Project Empowerment. Mm-hmm. That had backgrounds and returning citizens that been incarcerated. So he said, "This, I think this would be a good opportunity for you to start your own business." So that's how I was one of the people in the first cohort. I mean, I was one of the part of the first cohort. So that's where it all started, is through that Aspire program.
Was this a developed idea or something that you came into and that's been lingering in the back of your mind? I know you said this is something that you were dealing with yourself, you know, the transportation thing, but it's something that was like festering in the back of your mind, or was it, let me develop something because I've been asked to be a part of the program?
It was more of, if you're going to get in an entrepreneurship program, what are you going to start? So that's when I did my research on would be a great idea or a great business to start in my situation. What's so needed? You got to look at it. When you're a go-getter, you pay attention to the need. So entrepreneurship, you need to base your product or your service around what's needed and that is not going anywhere in no time soon. So that's how I came up with the idea for transportation.
Where are my notes? I need my notes. that is a great piece of advice for anyone who is starting their business. Most mm-hmm. of the time, entrepreneurs, when they start, they want to start on something that they are passionate about, which is
fun and bright
and bright and glittery. the podcast.
Here's the thing. The podcast business is going to be around for years. Like, yes, this is not no temporary fix or no temporary thing that's going on right now. And then next month is something different. 6 months from now is something different. You got to look at it. Podcasts are starting now to get serious money off of this. That's why people are getting into it. Like, I wanted to venture out and start my own Vision of Winning podcast, where we discuss these type of things of entrepreneurship, life, relationship goals, et cetera. Like, cause it's hard out here. And it's like, I think each one can teach one and we can learn from another person that's been through it.
Absolutely. I think it would be great, you know, for you to tell your story, but then for you to pull in others and allow mm-hmm. them to tell their stories. I think that would be really awesome. And yeah. I think I know people would listen to it. I would listen to it because I'm nosy.
Oh, hey, that's how we learn, though, being nosy sometimes.
Absolutely. That's the truth. Absolutely. So tell us about VOW and how it came to be. What does it stand for?
VOW, I'm going to tell you where I got VOW from first. Mm-hmm. I got VOW from my son, which he was a character on Call of Duty, which standing for Vision of Winning. That was his game tag, mm-hmm. right? So, and him and I discussing, I'm like, you know something, Ren, when we discussing this, when he showed me his game tech, I'm like, you know something? That's me. Like, I always have a vision to win, and it's been like that ever since my injury and trying to figure out how I'm going to win. So I told him, I'm like, you know something? Thanks for this. I'm going to use this. I'm going to start my transportation company and base it off this name. And it inspired me because now you're using it, because now it sounds like you're trying to program your mindset to wanting to win. And how are you going to win? So I based everything off of that. I started a transportation company. And once we got hit with COVID, I ended up starting the clothing brand, Vision of Winning Apparel. What else? And I'm trying to figure out my pivoting. Yeah, I started my nonprofit that I just need to get my 501c3 done. So it kind of opened up my eyes to a whole lot. And that's why I stuck with the vow. But we can go into some more stuff of how what came about of the clothing brand and the pivoting part of what's next and why I want to pivot, because this right here, this pandemic kind of showed me that you need to start a business that's pandemic proof from what I went through with my business.
Yeah. Speaking of the clothing, I'm going to send you the two shirts. I think it's one with like, it almost looks like a Polaroid. Both of the, it was a hoodie and then it was a t-shirt. Both of them were sold out. So I'm going to send you a picture. And when
I got a nice one for y'all. And y'all, I mean, my thing is I wouldn't even charge y'all full price just for having me on the show.
Oh.
I just give you a great discount on it.
Oh,
but it's a new tie-dye hoodie that just came in and I think the women going to, you know, love it.
Oh, all right. Let us know how we can cop that. But yeah, I was on there trying to just buy up everything.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
I was like,
you know, you
must be dope because it's all sold out.
Oh yeah, they come when they hit. I get a lot of inquiries about them. So, but you know why I started the brand Vision of Winning? Because in my early years as a teenager, I wore Boss, the clothing brand Boss, and it kind of left an. It kind of changed my mindset to that's how I wanted to be honest with y'all. Like when you back in the day, like not now, because you see everybody with it now, but like in the 90s up to the 2000s, when you saw people in balls, it kind of left a statement of he got it going on or he getting money, or it just make you feel like you, that's what you are. You're a boss, right? So it kind of shaped my mind to want to be a boss into everything that I'm doing. And that's a reason why I pushed myself so hard when I was doing whatever I was doing, illegal or legal, because I feel as though that I'm a boss. Even when I wear the clothes, when you look nice, that's just like a girl that just get her hair done. She got so much confidence in herself because she feel beautiful. Her makeup, her hair done, she might got on a nice outfit, so your confidence level is sky high. And it's like when I wore those items, I felt good about myself, even though, you know, it shouldn't take a clothing item to make you feel like that, but that was kind of the extra part of pushing my confidence level up. So when I started the Vision of Winning Apparel, it was more of a putting positive messages on clothing items which you own that can curb your mindset every day when you see it. So if someone say that, what kind of sweat hoodie is that, or what kind of sweatshirt or t-shirt is that, and you say, no, this is a Vision of Winning or whatever the case, it might have you to think, like, what I'm going to do today to try to win?
Yeah.
Or what positive things I can do to increase my chances of winning just based off of what I got on. So it was more of a clothing brand to try to put out more positive things to change the mindset of individuals who wear it.
Yep. Look good, you feel good. You know better, you do better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we need more positive influences. Like that, like brands that have meaning, young guys that have substance and can talk positive things. Maybe we can highlight those things instead of the negativity out here in the streets. So I really want to get my clothes to the youth also.
Yeah, when you were in one of the clubhouse rooms and you were speaking to, you know, some of the younger, you know, the younger generation, and they were talking about what are we going to do for the city and how we're going to get them in here, or, you know, should we get them on Clubhouse and all that other stuff.
Yeah,
and you basically said, one, they have to want it. You know, it's all about a mindset. They have to want to change it. And then two, you were telling, like, the artists, the rappers and the singers and stuff, highlight these kids in your music. You know, mm-hmm. it's cool that you're out there in the community and you're giving them money and clothes and stuff. But for those ones who ace their tests, the ones who are graduating, they look up to you guys. So when you have a song, I don't care what you're saying in a song, but if you, you know, big them up and tell them, like, yo, this kid just graduated from Dunbar or from McKinley Tech or, you know, just ace their test, they don't know what that would do for that kid. So,
and especially if you was an inner city artist and you mentioned how your young guy's about to join the fire department or on the ambulance or join the MPD or about to go to the service. Like, I think we need to shine light on that.
Mm-hmm.
We need to show the positive, because we didn't show the negative thing for too long.
Yeah.
And that's why it became a trend to do negative,
mm-hmm.
because that's what women, young girls like, women, guys like. It's time to change the narrative of what's hot and what's not.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
Definitely.
I always have to push that on people. Like, you make your own cool. Like, everybody wants to be up to this, up to that for everybody. Like, you make your own cool. Like, you decide what's cool. Paying your bills is amazing.
So right.
Cool. Exactly.
That is cool. Taking care of your business is so cool to me. Like,
yeah.
So, but we influence. We get too much negativity influences. Like, even with the rap music, the videos, the young girls, like, now you gotta look at it. I don't want my daughter looking at Megan Stallion with her knees and shit. Or like,
she has some strong knees.
Because you don't think that you're being influenced, but sometimes I'm like, dang, I know all the words to this City Girl song. Like, I need to chill out. I don't think I'm being influenced by
Mulatto.
It,
now whatever. Younger girls gonna want to be like Mulatto.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need some positive. You know, like, where's a positive young girl that make good music? But, you know, she might got a little raunchy edge, but she not giving you, showing she's the thumb and talking about how she do like this that. And do that, even though we know that sex sells in the music industry. And it's just kind of sad that they only looking for artists who talking like this.
Yeah,
that is
so. But it's like, we got to change the narrative. Like, where's the Lauryn Hills? Where's the Queen Latifah's and the who else, the young lady that she do the talking now?
Yeah.
MC Light.
MC Light.
Or, you know,
yeah.
Like, we need more of them to push for younger girls, because they need a change. They need this whole thing to change of what's hot. Right now, this dirty, nasty talk is hot. These guns and drugs and lean and Percocets, that's hot. Like, that's why we see so much of it.
Yeah.
And Chicago rappers, they making killing the person cool.
I said that the other day. It almost seems like talking about killing in Chicago is normal. Like, if you're not, like, what you doing? Like, it should be, that's weird to me. I don't know.
But it's influencing our youth like crazy.
Yeah.
And they don't really want to go through that, but they think that's cool. And the young girls is making them feel like that is cool. Like, if you ain't talking about this and you ain't talking about that, you ain't talking about nothing.
As somebody who said they changed their mind, basically, you know, an incident had to happen, but you had always had this mindset instilled into you. So what do you feel like if somebody can't get out of their situation, an inner city youth kid or something like that, who can't get out of their situation and wants to change their mind, what kind of steps can they take? Because I feel like it's much easier said than done. It's when you're caught up in a lifestyle, you do something every single day and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And you have to break yourself out of it.
But that's on the individual. I think the individual have to come to a sense of self, like, how, I mean, basically saying, like, do you want to continue doing this? Like, a lot of them don't, but some of them have to due to their upbringing or due to associations and where they grew up. But they have to want to give it up themselves. Like, you need to change your surroundings. If you're around all negative people, most likely you want to think negative. So that's why we need more positive young guys that's getting money to show the negative ones, like, I can get serious money just by signing up for being a fireman or being, you know, working an ambulance or just a career-wise that you can make good money as if you're in the streets. Because now the guys that's positive, young guys that's positive, they looking like the street guys and they ain't even in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we need more people to just try to get them to change that mindset of, yo, you can make it without doing this. Like, come on. Like, let me hang you. You know, you need to come and hang around me here and there. But it won't be a waste if they do want to change. It's going to be a waste if they thinking they're going to get fast return. Mm. Like, if they thinking they're going to get quick money. See, a lot of them will change, but in their mind, they want quick money.
Yeah.
Huh?
I said, I think that's a youth problem. So, like, this problem with instant gratification, that doesn't have... I wouldn't say that doesn't have anything to do with, like, your upbringing and stuff like that, but I think that's a generational thing. Like, just needing everything right now. They don't want to work. They don't want to wait 2 weeks for the paycheck. Like, they just need... Like, everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's... Our worst thing was the microwave.
Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah, quick. Instant. So fast. So now everything want to be like microwavable.
Like
getting
5G,
money so fast.
Wi-Fi,
becoming
everything.
Balls so fast. Want to get rich so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of that grind, that hustle, that look, this is going to take some time, but you continue working hard, it's going to come. Like, it ain't no more of that. But, you know, you got to emphasize that. And that's why I was saying with the entrepreneurs, too. Don't think it's going to be all fine and dandy or whatever the case is. It's going to be some bumps in the road, some trials and tribulations that you need to know, especially in the early stage of entrepreneurship when it comes to payroll, unemployment taxes, people who keeping up with your books, QuickBooks, tax prepares. Those are all the things I had to learn in my second year of business.
Mm.
But it almost cost me my business if I wouldn't have saved no money, you know? So... It's like we have to be taught the reality. And that's what I was saying about these entrepreneurship classes. Don't tell them that basic 101 starting a business because they ain't faced with that when they get out in this world. Yeah. I need to know reality. Tell me how I do payroll. Tell me about my unemployment taxes. Tell me about who going to keep up with my P&Ls. You know what I'm saying? Who gonna help me with my tax prepare? Because those are all the things that you can lose your business off.
Yeah.
Tell me about, what is it? Clean hands.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about those. Like those that they don't tell you about that in the class.
Everybody's like, yeah, just pick something, sell it, multiply it, bring it back.
What?
And most of the stuff you really, they can tell you all they want. But until you actually get in and actually do it, it's almost one of those things where you have to fail. You know, you have to fail or be on the brink of failing for you to actually pull yourself up.
Everything you need to know,
because we definitely are. You know, we learn the hard way with the taxes, the employment, you know, the nonprofit aspect of it.
Y'all ain't paying y'all taxes.
Oh, look, Mitt Romney don't pay no tax, okay? Why I gotta pay him? I'm about to go talk to his accountant, okay? But all those things. And then, you know, just the day-to-day. What am I supposed to do today? You know I have to do this, this, and that, but what else is there? You know, what papers?
Downtime, you almost feel guilty. Like,
yeah, my banking, and then, you know, I think it's also being an entrepreneur. People think that you now have all the time in the world when it's the opposite. You have no time.
Yeah.
No time.
I'm gonna tell you from experience what is so vital for an entrepreneur, having a business mentor. That's been in business for years.
That
can tell you about what they went through. So to me, that's very vital, is having a business mentor. And then another thing is that just learning your lane. whatever you're doing business in. Learn that lane.
Never stop so learning.
So you can know how to excel in your business, and you know what makes sense, what don't make sense. Like I went through a lot. Like I'm being honest with you, my first year, I think I lost like $60,000 because I was moving too fast, but I thought I was playing safe. And the reason why I say this is because when I got my first three vans, it was in 2016, and my vans was 2017. So I spent $48,000 each van, right? But the point is, I didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. I could have went and got a used van within the 10 years that was in good shape, saved me. You got to look at it. I just paid my vans off. I paid the 2016 off probably last year, but I just paid the two 2017s off. Like I just got the title probably about a week ago. But the thing is, what I'm saying is that's $48,000 each van that I could have saved at least $75,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 within 2 years of business, because a lot of that money went into paying van notes. $2,500. Imagine paying $2,500 for 3 years when I could have got each one of those vans for $10,000, $12,000 at a dealer's auction, but I ended up getting it for $48,000. But I only did that is because I wanted reliable. Once you're in these government contracts, they're not trying to hear you can't transport these kids right now.
Yep.
Your van is broke down. So that was the part I had to learn. So now from this point on, I would never go get me anything brand new.
Yeah.
I learned that the hard way too. Yeah. That's just a regular cost.
Regular cost.
Regular cost.
Yeah. It's a lot of trials and tribulations as an entrepreneur go through.
I hear you talking about the business mentorship, because I don't think people, you know, reiterate how important it is to kind of listen to who came before you. Because I don't really, you know.
You don't really what?
I don't listen to too many people. But go
ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to ask you, like, how important do you think it is for you to put people in positions to better themselves? Or are you one of those people who want people to come find you? Do you feel like you need to go out here? Because I remember we asked Vic this too. Like, do you feel like you need to give back to your community in a sense of helping to bring people up and to change their minds and stuff like that? Or are you still on the...
From my experience, and that's why I came up with impact over income, is because I looked at it as the people who helped me to get to where I'm at and to learn what I have learned in business. And if I didn't have a mentor, I wouldn't learn that stuff. Or it would have took some time over years to learn it. But it helped me with things I wasn't sure about. It helped me to make better decisions when I probably would have made the worst decision. So I think in business, especially as an entrepreneur, try to find someone that can be a mentor, and I ain't gonna say they have to be in your lane of like whatever you're doing, but they can just have that experience of business, because there's gonna be some things, some gems that they're gonna drop to you that you was unaware, didn't know anything about, that you can utilize for your own, business. So, I mean, I kind of dropped some jewels to people that just starting off, but I base everything off my experience. So I tell them, like, this is what I went through. I don't try to tell them, because a lot of things I'm not sure and I'm still learning. I'm still absorbing like a sponge myself. But I talk from my experience, what I went through and what I think. You can do some more research, but this is what I think you should do. I try to put them in directions of black banks, black tax preparers, people that will help you. So I kind of mentor from my experience.
I like that.
Yeah. So how long have you and your wife been married?
I've been married for 3 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. So she the one who got you right, huh? With that business.
Yeah, it's more. No, it's just the support. Like, when it was rough for me to pay bills, she like, listen, I understand. Like, I'm going to hold it down until everything get back together. So, you know, and I think that's what you need. Because if I'm being honest with you, if I was living by myself, I would have lost probably my apartment. I probably would have lost some of my vans.
But you had a plan. So that makes sense, though. Like, once you got a plan, usually the support ain't hard. That's how I feel.
So, you know, I think that support is hard on it. And if you're an individual by yourself doing it, do not move too fast because it can hurt you in the long run. You got to look at it. I haven't been working since March, but I got, you know, some PPP loans and all that stuff that kind of helped me out. But say if I didn't get that.
Yeah.
I mean, PPP grants, but not the loans part. I got loans due to the experience and based off my contract. But imagine if I was on my own. It would have been rough for me. I messed around, just had one van. Or the repo people would have been looking for them, either or, until I started back working. But I haven't worked since March.
And you said
but I don't think your woman going to leave you if you got a $1.5 million contract, girl.
You're here in the background.
Hell nah.
Hell nah.
I was in the gym with you, Chet. So nah, we're going to figure this out.
Yeah,
just
remember,
we're
right.
Going to write down all the stuff that I covered. So, y'all, man, I swear it's
Look,
like...
she I'm keeping the books.
Right.
Yes, keeping the books on you. But, you know, she deserved it because...
Hell yeah.
Hey, it was rough and tough for me. But you know what makes it so believable is when what you went through and you see a check for like almost $20,000 for a week worth of work. Like 20 bands for a week. Like, I think I cried when I first seen that check. Even though, but here's the thing though. In my years, I had some good contracts. Like when I was doing... like DOES had a program where they was installing security cameras. If you ever Google that, you'll see that me and the guy that was from Inspire was one of the contractors on it, and they was paying us $1,000 a home, and I had like 300 homes. That was just to install a security cam in 4 months. So my company made like $300,000 in 4 months just installing security cameras. But it was just... Once you see it's obtainable, it push you hot. It push you more.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you believe yourself now. Like in the beginning, it's all a struggle and like, am I gonna get this? Is it gonna work out in my favor? And then when you start to get paid, like especially when you barely making it, because my first contract with MTM, I didn't really make no money.
Mm-hmm.
The MTM transport put me over, like because my when I first got in my contract, I lost $60,000. Because I moved too fast on how, you know, end up jumping out there, getting these vans. And then they lied to me on how much work they're going to have, but I'm still responsible. So I'm like, Joe, I got to figure something out. So that they end up getting a contract with OSCE where they were transporting the kids, you know, kids with behavior issues. So we were transporting them, made a little bit of money. So I'm like, okay, this is good. I can make this, you know, bring in almost $200,000 off of this. So I was doing that. Then next thing you know, the CFSA people heard about what I was doing with them, and they invited me to a solicitation. I ended up getting doing the solicitation, ended up getting awarded on the CFSA contract, and that's transporting foster kids. So, you know, it's a 4-year contract, 1.5 a year. I'm like, they finally paid off. But COVID hit. And that's when I lost my mind. So, yeah, like, so COVID hit. I only did a week's worth of work. But the good thing, I just, you know, stay focused. And they let me know that, you know, when this clear up, you'll be back to work.
Amen.
So,
right.
That was the blessing part of it. But say if COVID, if they would say, you know something, we're going to end this contract due to this. I'd have been like, what's next? What's next? I got these vans I have to pay for. So that's what came up. That's what during the pandemic, I came up with pivoting. What's my next move? What's my next business if anything ever happened like this again? So that's why now I would start a pandemic-proof business, which is I would get into the box trucks or the tractor trailers, which I know ain't going nowhere no time soon. People need everything transported. So that's my next move. Once everything open back up, I get back to work, I'm going to buy me about 2 box trucks.
Because I do know at the start of the pandemic, all the truckers were overloaded. Like,
they still working.
They still moving.
Overtime.
Yeah, they moved straight through the pandemic.
And I saw where you also got a contract with the prison system Were you transporting?
Family members. But that was a temporary. It wasn't nothing major because I didn't have a van with a bathroom.
And it I know it said like a couple hundred miles.
Yeah, it was something about how far you going, and it would have been a big risk if I was transporting people and they had to get off the van and go use a restroom. You could lose somebody's child or something could happen. So they was more of we'll give you a few little contracts. That was through the deputy mayor's office. Mm. Courtney Snowed and them kind of, you know, looked out and hooked me up with some people. Introduced me, I ain't going to say hooked me up. Introduced me to some people that was dealing with the returning citizens. So I did a few runs with them. So that's how that went. But it was more of a, you need a van. You need one of those
charter buses
to New York. Yeah. You know, I had 55 in the bathroom in the back.
Yeah.
I needed one of those.
That's a charter bus, ain't it?
Yep.
Yes. That's a charter bus. So that's what they that was the risk, the liability risk for that. But they was like, we want to, you know, support you because you came through Aspire, you're a returning citizen, and we this would be perfect. So, you know, I went to a few jails, Cumberland, et cetera. So that was just an idea. But right now I'm sticking with the government and transporting your kids.
Oh no, that's right. So you're starting your nonprofit, right?
Yeah, I already have it. I just have to do the 501c3.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
That's a pain, boy.
How about saving
that? That paperwork. That paperwork.
But the thing is, it's so many grants for it.
Oh, like, yeah.
You can find you some work, especially if it's some positive things you're doing. So yeah. I just want to give back, like I said earlier, impact over income, because I noticed that's how the more positive things that I was doing, the more doors open.
Yep.
And I noticed, like in government, you have to be impactful. That's a correct word, right?
Yep.
Impactful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got to be impactful, and they're going to pay you. If you're changing some lives, changing some economic status, giving out, supporting, the government is going to look out for you.
And there's so much money out there. There's so much money, right, out there for, like you said, people who are, you know, changing lives, doing impactful things. So
this is community engagement.
Yeah, community engagement, helping the youth, the elderly, disability, all those things.
I noticed there's a program, a group, a gathering for everything that you can care about too.
Yeah.
You can really just find something to really care about, and somebody gonna gather.
Hey, I care about it, we gonna gather.
Seriously. What you do is you build a relationship with your council members.
Mm-hmm.
Go to them. That's the key. Meetings.
Build that relationship with your council members, because the council members need impactful things to stay in office.
Yeah.
They need to tie themselves up to certain things. Will get votes. Will keep you in. Will keep them in office. So believe me, they have a budget of how much money comes in that they got to disperse to nonprofits, to the community engagement, to those type of things. So you have to learn, whatever you're getting involved in, you got to learn where the money is coming from. Who is giving the money out? Who is giving the money out? And then how your program, your company can provide those services. And that's what I learned in business.
Do you feel that the new DC, do you feel that there is still a huge need, or that, you know, our community still has the resources that it needs?
To be honest with you, from the last 3 years, DC has grown to be one of the best cities, you know, even though I only lived in DC, but I see a lot of trying to uplift the city as a whole. And they're giving out a lot of opportunities for women, people with disabilities, people that have been incarcerated. It's just that we have to learn how to take advantage. Hold on. Y'all can see me?
Yes.
Yeah, we have to learn how to take advantage of these things. And that's where we go wrong as a race. We're not taking advantage of the opportunities that are being presented to us and for us. So you have to You like the new DC? I'm loving the new DC because they making it happen.
You can hear that's me? Dope. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's dope. We don't hear that often, especially from, you know, our people. We don't hear it often to where, you know, you hear somebody say, oh, I love the new DC, because they feel like, oh, the white people have come in and they're taking it over and they're changing stuff. And, you know, we're being displaced and all those other things. So to hear you saying that I love the new DC is
it's bringing a breath us together.
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air.
But it's going to be a lot of things that we don't agree about, especially when it comes to gentrification. And,
yeah.
And that they these high rents and the proportion that they've given only a certain amount to DC residents to live in these high end buildings. Mm. But like, it was a time that I was asking for money for, you heard of the opportunity zones?
Yep. Yeah.
Like I was trying to get some money off of opportunity zones where I was, you know, giving my pitch to, you know, some rich people that how I'm trying to do this and do that. Like I was trying to provide a service where I like the metro, uh-huh. But it was a shuttle service that take you to different wards.
Mm-hmm.
So like you got to look at a lot of people trying to get on the bus or whatever the case. I had a certain route that I was going to do where I go to, you know, this ward, that ward, that ward. Just if you work over in these areas, it'll take you straight downtown just to try to help low income communities to get to work faster.
Mm.
Instead of sitting and waiting on the bus or just whatever the case, or even if I take you to the subway station. But I was trying to get the government to fund it, where the government paid me and I just had my vans around the city. Mm-hmm. And you know, we had some type of where you like a subscription or a card or what makes you eligible to be able to get on this service, where I take you either downtown or the nearest subway station, but I'm going inside the hoods.
Mm-hmm.
In the neighborhoods. So it was like a speedier transportation service than the bus. Because right. You know how slow the bus is. Yes. So it was things that we was pitching. But eventually I would get there because I'm going to try to provide shuttle service for these high-end buildings. It just said I got to wait till the world kind of open back up to throw these ideas out there to them. So, I mean, we just got to adapt to what's going on. Yeah. All these free classes, like, educate yourself. Get involved. Like, I understand that this stuff is high, but we got to prepare ourselves. We can't keep blaming the white man for everything. Some things we just got to want ourselves. Like, if you want to be here in life, you need to figure out how you're going to get there.
And start preparing yourself. And I say that about gentrification, too, like, while it is irritating to see the process happen, you have to look at it. If the white people are coming to your city, they obviously see opportunities that you're not seeing. You know, like if they can come through and build up and like, well, y'all ain't doing nothing here. Let me come through and do what I have to do. That should be a reflection on your own selves. So,
yeah,
I agree to what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you have to take it too.
Yeah. Like you have to take it at face value.
Yeah. Take the opportunity. Don't just wait, you know, for something to fall in your lap. And I think that's what we do a lot as a people. We wait for things to fall in our lap. I know. I used to.
It's too hard when we see it falling, coming down on us. And we're like, oh, no, it actually dropped on us. Now it's terrible. Like, no.
Like you said, there were days where you couldn't pay your bills. You didn't know how you was going to eat. But, you know, there was a bigger picture. You know, there was a bigger picture with this whole. Right. And you saw the picture. It wasn't, you know, I'm not going to, you know, make $1 million in a year or 2 years. This is a 5-year plan and I'm going to go after that. But I'm going to work my ass off, you know, in the meantime to get to where I want to be.
Yeah.
And all the support of the people around you and you actually taking, those opportunities, it is a huge part of it. So
I think we got to push people to be more goal driven, you know, to make them want it.
Chameleons.
Instead of a handout, instead of someone giving it to them, make them want it, make them want to work hard to get it and to get where they're trying to get at. So it's how bad you want it. Like, that's what it boils down to, because when you want something bad, you're going to make it happen. You're going to do that overtime. You're going to put more than 100%. Yeah. But if you, that individual that you looking for a handout and you expecting people to do this and do that for you, you're gonna settle for basic. Like, to me, it's like they say education is the great equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that as you have to really push yourself to where you really want to be at in life. Get rid of the excuses, upgrade your value. Don't give up. Like, don't give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Y'all hear that? No more excuses. 2021. Upgrade yourself. Let me upgrade yourself.
Be allergic to average.
I like that. Where's my book?
We ain't got no notes.
No notes and not be allergic to average. I love that. That's dope.
And I feel like as Black people, we need to learn that we can step into these rooms too. You know, not just on Clubhouse. No, seriously though, because y'all laughing at me for going to town hall meetings in Woodstock.
I did not laugh at you for going to the town hall.
Yes,
meeting.
You did.
I just didn't understand why she don't live in Woodstock. Why are you in Woodstock at the town hall?
They need to come up with a marijuana Woodstock.
Oh, you on to something.
Go to
that's what they're about to legal it. They really need to come up with a Woodstock for marijuana.
She in the town hall meetings. I'm just not in her area. She on the other y'all side of town.
But I'm just saying, you know, we have to get out here and realize that we are like, you know, Georgia turned the place blue, right? Didn't we do something? Thank you, Stacey.
We did something.
Right. So, you know, we can get out here and do other things besides get lit and go to the club. We got to be interested in other things.
Hookah bars during COVID. Yeah. Also,
don't judge us.
I'm not.
I am.
Don't judge us.
I think also, you know, Black and brown people, people of color, whatever you want to call yourself or us, knowing our greatness, you know, and I think it starts there. Like you said, no more excuses, but you also have to dig deep into yourself and know that you are great. And it sounds cliche, but literally anything that man can do, I can do. You know, if he did it, it's possible. And when my husband and I first got together, our 1 year anniversary, we drove through Rock Creek Park and those big ass houses and all that stuff. And we used to just sit there and we used to plan for the next 5 years. Yeah. Well, we would go on Zillow, find ones that were, you know, we didn't want to scare nobody.
Y'all sitting in front of people's house.
You know, Black people just pulling up in your driveway. And it's like, oh, this is somebody's reality. This is a possibility. And it's not just for them. It's for me too. Like, if they can do it, I can do it. But how do I get to this, you know, get to that point? And every year, every anniversary, we do the same thing. We go and find the biggest house in the neighborhood and the most influential neighborhood. Uh-huh. And then we sit in front of it and we create for the next, you know, 5 years. Our perfect life. And we always say, okay, if you win the lottery, what's your first step? And that's the thing. You don't have to win the lottery. The lottery is every day. The lottery is the journey. But once you get to that part, like what's your next step? What's your first step? Step one is always step one. So
I think people think those goals are hard to reach. Because there might be some major goals, but I think if you set smaller goals, like the other day, my wife said something to me about, like, okay, we're going to go ahead and start working on this credit. Let's start, you know, because, you know, I got hit with the COVID where, you know, certain things was late and all that made the credit score go down. But she was like, okay, well, it's the top of the year. Let's focus on this. Let's focus on your credit first. Mm-hmm. Let's get it back to what it was. And then after that, we're going to go to the next step. What's the next step?
Yep.
Are we interested in selling the house or are we looking for a bigger house? It's just that you got to set small goals that's obtainable where it don't seem like it's a lot.
Absolutely.
People tend to put a lot on themselves of having high expectations and big goals. But if you chop that goal down into small goals, it makes it easier to obtain or to reach.
Yep. Every time you check one off, you get closer to that, exactly, that bigger goal. So you keep just...
Before you know it, your credit score is 750 on up.
Yep.
Everything working in y'all favor. Now y'all can sit down at a realtor. Now we can get that house we were talking about last year. But we had to sacrifice and self-discipline ourselves to, like, listen, this is what we really want. Let's go ahead and work and focus on obtaining that, because it's durable.
Yeah, it really, really is. So what's next, Duda? You have a son. How does your son?
I'm trying to hear y'all. The volume kind of low. Hold on. Let me put in the headphones real quick.
Okay.
Hold on, please.
Take it down.
Ooh.
Dang. Mine went off.
Hello?
Because you were on the phone.
Yeah, I can hear y'all now.
Okay. So you have a son. How old is your son?
16. Oh. And I have a 3-year-old daughter.
And you have a 3-year-old daughter.
That's like it. Well, other way around.
What? Oh, yeah.
Jane, 16.
I have a 16-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son, and a 4-year-old son. Whew.
You ain't gotta tell me. I got a 3-year-old that act like he about 8.
Yep, that sounds about right. Do you want them to work with the business? Does your son help you?
What I want to do is introduce them to the skill sets of running the business. Mm. But whatever they choose to do is, I support that, because my business might not be something they want to get involved in. So, but the thing is, I just want you to see how I went out and paid my own way. And these are things I had to do. Like, I get my son to help me with certain things, but I don't enforce it, because sometimes they become rebellious when you try to force things that you may want them to like. So you try to figure out, what do they like? Let's try this. Mm-hmm. Let's try that. You know what I'm saying? Just to get a feel of them, because I had to learn my son. And when he become rebellious and when he, you know, get in his shell, the more you try to put this on him and put that on him,
yeah,
you know. So I just, right now, and I just lay back and let him know, like, you got to look at it. You're about to be in the 12th grade. After 12th grade, what's your move? Because here's the only choices you have. College, an entrepreneur, a career, or the service. Yeah. Those are the only choices you have. And we're not going to settle. Before I let you settle for a basic 9-to-5, I send you off to the service. Because I know it's going to make a man of you. And I know when you come home from that service, you're going to be in a great position to really get your life in order, you know, money-wise, career-wise. So those are choices. But I don't really push what I do, because if it's something he interested in, he'll want to be involved.
That's true. Plus the service, they got them good benefits.
Mm-mm. Exactly. Go they to got college that Camaro for free. Starter
package. Right, the Camaro starter package and good dental. Okay. Everybody from the military got good teeth. Okay.
Good teeth and Camaro. Good dental, all that.
The dental. So, yeah.
But that's how it is.
Thank you so much. This was really dope. Do you have anything for us? Or anything?
No, I just wanted to say this, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to just share, you know, what I've been through in life and how I overcame, you know, certain situations, and how, you know, my mindset shifted and changed to doing positive things, and how I look at life now, like, as impact over income. And it opened doors. And if you need a mentor or whatever the case, I'm there. But, you know, I'm going to talk about my experience and what I went through. So I don't mind giving back any way I can, but I really want to push my clothing brand, because I want to try to change that mindset of seeing more positive things. You know, like, that's like when you see a guy t-shirt, especially if you get high, and on his t-shirt is a guy, a roll blunt or some weed. So now that's going to encourage him, like, you know something, I need to get high today just from looking at his shirt.
Yeah.
So I look at it as, if I can give you a positive message or affirmation or a quote, it can help you make you think, like, you know something, I need to really work on myself or push myself, because I think I can win too. And that's where that vision of winning comes from, is creating a positive mindset to want to do great or want to win at anything you're doing. It don't even have, you don't have to be an athlete. You could be a mom, a dad, a 9-to-5 guy, an entrepreneur. It's just that you programming yourself of what you need to do to win.